trend, crude oil prices surged about $70 a barrel for the first time in a year following a Yemeni drone and ballistic missile attack on Saudi oil facilities. The United States says it has made no decisions yet about the withdrawal of its remaining troops from Afghanistan after May the 1st. And in the UK, Meghan Markle, the wife of Prince Harry, accuses the British royal family of racism. Hello everyone, welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Ben Sanjay. Good to have you with us. Now, starting with our top story, oil prices have jumped significantly after Saudi Arabia confirmed a Yemeni drone and missile attack on its oil facilities inside the kingdom. Brent crude surged more than 2% to above $70 a barrel in Monday trade. That's the highest price since May 2019. That happened after the Saudi Energy Ministry confirmed that a drone hit a petroleum tank farm at Ras Tanura, one of the world's largest oil shipping ports. The ministry said a ballistic missile also targeted Aramco facilities in the city of Dahran. The Yemeni army says it has targeted Saudi oil facilities with 14 drones and 8 ballistic missiles. Now, journalist and political analyst Yusuf Mahri says that the target of the Yemeni attacks on Saudi Arabia is its economy, not the Saudi people.
Tens of thousands of Yemenis and hundreds of thousands more who have starved to death due to the strangling blockade on Yemen's economy. And this is a case, I think, where Yemenis are dealing with a bully. And like all bullies, they're not going to stop the bullying unless they get punched in the nose. And I think this is what the Yemeni people are coming to realize. So, latest attacks are in accordance with the Yemeni army's retaliatory attacks, which is aimed specifically at targeting Saudi Arabia's most precious jewel, which is Aramco oil. Ansar Allah, they believe that if they continue to target Saudi Arabia's economy, then that will, the end game will be Saudi Arabia will put up the white flag and say, no more, we want an end to the war, because now the war is, you know, the tables are turning, and the tables will start to turn, and Saudi Arabia's economy will suffer in the future if this war continues. Their reputation is already tarnished, and if this war continues, more military sites of Saudi Arabia are going to be targeted, and their economy will continue to suffer.
Tehran has denounced as shameful the situation in Yemen, calling for an end to the Saudi-led aggression against the country. Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh says that the current disaster in Yemen is rooted in the six-year-long war imposed on the country by Saudi Arabia and its allies. Khatibzadeh says that the coalition is even making use of terrorist elements in Yemen to advance its hostile policies. He was referring to a recent report by the Yemeni intelligence services that Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists assist Saudi-backed forces in that country. The official said that Iran has repeatedly emphasized a ceasefire and the removal of a Saudi-imposed blockade to end the crisis. Yemen's medical workers have staged a demonstration in front of the UN office in Sana'a. They slammed the continued seizure of oil vessels by the Saudi-led coalition, which has led to the closure of numerous medical facilities. Our correspondent has more in the report.
Hundreds of medical workers have gathered in front of the United Nations office in the capital Sana'a. They denounced the international community for turning a blind eye on the continued seizure of oil ships by the Saudi-led coalition, which has put the war-torn country to a severe fuel crisis.
I suffer from kidney failure and I have to travel 50 kilometers to get to the dialysis center despite the lack of fuel. I need dialysis 3 times a week, but I only get one because of the blockade on our country. We call on the international organizations to stand by our side and help us to get the fuel in order to save our lives.
The Ministry of Health said over 1,500 medical facilities, including dialysis centers, are on the verge of total shutdown due to the lack of fuel. The ministry has urged the international community to step in and pressure the Saudi-led coalition to release the seized oil tankers.
Blocking oil vessels from entering the country threatens to stop many health facilities. There are more than 1,500 health centers and 400 laboratories and blood banks on the verge of closure. Centers that generate oxygen may also stop. The lives of patients may end within days. Patients with kidney problems are the most affected. There are more than 5,000 patients who need dialysis several times a week.
The United Nations says the Saudi war on Yemen, along with the years-long blockade, has driven the country into the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Thousands of patients, including children, may lose their lives within days unless the international community breaks its silence and pressures Saudi Arabia to release the illegally detained oil vessels. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The United States says that all options are on the table for its remaining troops in Afghanistan as it's facing a May 1st deadline for their withdrawal. The State Department spokeswoman says that the U.S. has not made any decision about its forced posture in Afghanistan after the due date. The deadline was set in an agreement signed by the Taliban militant group and the Trump administration in Qatar in 2020. That's why the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says that Washington is considering the full withdrawal of forces along with other options. Blinken made the comments in a letter to Afghan President Ashraf Ghani. He also called for a 90-day reduction in violence in Afghanistan and a new international peace effort overseen by the U.N. He, however, warned that the troop withdrawal may worsen the security condition in the country. The controversial intra-Afghan talks in Qatar is reaching its final days. So far, they have failed to even reduce the level of violence in Afghanistan. In the meantime, the U.S. is calling for the creation of an interim government. Our correspondent Amin Alami reports from Kabul.
It's been almost 6 months since the first intra-Afghan talks in the Qatari capital, Doha, but so far, no viable agreement has been reached. The situation in Afghanistan has now become so complicated that the Afghan president is agreeing to hold an early election.
We stand ready to discuss holding free, fair, and inclusive elections under the auspices of the international community. We can also talk about the date of the elections and reach a conclusion.
Ashraf Ghani, however, strongly rejected a U.S. plan to form an interim government. The Afghan president said the only legitimate way to gain political power in Afghanistan is through elections.
Any institution can write a fiction on a piece of paper and suggest a solution for Afghanistan. These papers have been written in the past and will be written in the future. Our guarantee is our constitution.
President Ghani's comments came after calls for forming an interim government in Afghanistan increased in the past couple of months. This is why the U.S. Special Representative Zalmay Khalilzad met some top prominent political leaders, tribal elders, and other influential figures during his recent visit to Kabul. The meeting soon faced mixed reactions. Many here say the main agenda of Khalilzad is to convince the Afghan president to accept an interim government and hold another round of talks in Turkish capital Ankara.
This is clear that Khalilzad wants to put pressure on both the Afghan government and the Taliban to approve an interim government. President Ghani's reaction also means that he is not ready to accept whatever Washington wants.
While the Afghan government brands the establishment of any interim government as the death of democracy in Afghanistan, President Ghani's yes to an early election is considered as a green light for the Taliban to join a democratic process in order to gain power. Now, only time will tell whether or not the Taliban, the Afghan government, and the U.S. can make a comprehensive agreement or not. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The United States and South Korea have reached an agreement under which Seoul accepts to increase its funding for U.S. military troops stationed in that country. The six-year deal replaces a similar accord which expired in 2019. Under the previous agreement, Seoul had been paying Washington some $920 million annually. Both sides avoided specifying the agreed amount for the new deal. Seoul has been paying the U.S. for its troop presence since early 1990s. The two nations have also started their nine-day annual military exercise. 28,500 American troops are stationed in the country to defend it against possible threats from its neutral armed neighbor, North Korea. Two demonstrators have been killed by gunshot wounds to the head and three others injured in a northern city of Myanmar. Witnesses saying that police fired stun grenades and tear gas at the crowd. Several people were then hit by gunfire from buildings nearby. It's not clear who fired at the protesters. The rallies were held in support of a call from 18 trade unions to strike. And this is after another weekend of violent clashes between ralliers, police, and the military. More than 50 people have been killed and some 1,800 arrested since the army took over the elected government on February the 1st and detained the civilian officials. Now, in a bombshell interview with a U.S. news broadcaster, Meghan Markle, the wife of British Prince Harry, has revealed the prevailing racism in the monarchy that she experienced after joining the royal family.
So we have in tandem the conversation of he won't be given security, he's not going to be given a title, and also concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he's born.
Sitting next to Harry, Meghan was referring to official concerns about the appearance of her unborn son and the security that he would be entitled to. She said that the family refused to make Archie a prince, partly due to conversations about how dark his skin might be. Meghan also complained about Kate Middleton, the wife of Prince William, saying that she made her cry before the wedding over flower girl dresses. She also talked about Harry's rift with his father. And Harris said that his experience with Meghan showed how hard it must have been for his deceased mother, Diana. The United States is facing a possible third surge of COVID-19, and yet some areas are controversially reopening. And that could further stress a healthcare system which many say has been unable to respond to the challenges posed by the coronavirus. Rami Mazahiri has a report from Chicago.
Parts of the United States have declared an end to pandemic restrictions, even though the daily death toll remains near the peak seen last spring. Combined with the appearance of new corona variants, many are predicting a third deadly surge, which would further devastate a nation that combines the developed world's worst healthcare system with the least healthy citizenry.
The United States recently passed a 500,000 deaths, but their deaths per 1 million people is five times the global average. Only a handful of nations have a higher fatality rate, and all of them are in the West.
In the United States, the de facto mass quarantine provided by so-called lockdowns were first enforced not to avoid deaths, but because the nation collectively admitted that their underfunded healthcare system would have been quickly overwhelmed. Almost 1 year after a national emergency was declared, the healthcare system has not been drastically resupplied or overhauled. President Joe Biden, unlike a majority of Americans, refuses to support a universal healthcare system, something that would drastically improve healthcare access for the lower classes and reduce the national fatality rate.
It's those particular things that they that existed in the normal that allowed COVID to have its 1 in 1,000 people are being killed by it in America, and it's also the reason why in Chicago, for example, 70% of them are black.
Many wonder if the country's overstressed and underpaid healthcare workers may be the next link to break in the national medical chain.
And we're seeing like large amounts of nurses are leaving the industry because of the negative impact that not just COVID, but because of like how these hospitals have operated. What have we seen? Strikes. There was at least two nurses strikes in Chicago that I can think of in these last 9 months. And what did I find out there? most of those nurses weren't even making the $15 minimum wage.
The creation of vaccines has allowed the U.S. to set a goal of vaccinating all adults by mid-May. However, polls show that 40% of the nation does not want to get vaccinated, which increases the likelihood of continued corona carnage. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Now, at least 15 people have been killed in a series of large explosions at a military base in the city of Bata in Equatorial Guinea. President Teodoro Obiang says that some 500 people were also injured. In a statement on national television, Obiang stressed that the blasts were caused by negligence related to the use of dynamite at the base. Based on local media, who are calling people to donate blood, while noting that hospitals in the region are overwhelmed, the blast comes as Equatorial Guinea, an oil producer, is suffering a double economic shock because of the COVID pandemic and a drop in the price of crude, which provides around 3/4 of the state revenue. The Islamic Movement in Nigeria has marked its annual Martyrs Day. Our correspondent there, Danjuma Abdullahi, has a report from a suburb of the Nigerian capital.
The Shuhada Day is an annual day marked every 25th of Rajab on the Islamic calendar to remember members who were martyred in various ways during the activities of the Islamic movement. There are currently 1,039 members who are martyred, leaving behind 449 wives and over 2,300 orphans. Taking care of the orphans is one of the major challenges of the foundation.
Even a living person now can hardly manage his family, chockless of we that have been charged with the responsibility of caring for the martyrs. It's a big challenge. However, we must commend our brothers for making their own effort, the little donation they make. You know, drop by drop, an ocean is made.
Officials of the foundation said every year the number of martyrs keeps increasing in view of attacks by security forces during religious events. However, they called on members to be peaceful and to visit each other and extend friendship to all Muslims, irrespective of denomination, in order to promote Islamic unity.
Human beings will never progress without peace. And in fact, the basic teaching of Islam is to bring brotherhood among all humanities without any discrimination between different denominations of their own faith. Likewise, you have to help any other human being that is being cheated, especially in this era in Nigeria, where the mighty ones descend on the weaker ones.
Members who survived attacks from security forces also attended this occasion. Members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria here have said that violence, that the killings of their members will never stop them from practicing Islam. They said the martyrs of the Islamic movement will continue to be remembered with fondness and kind memories. Danjuma Abdullahi, Suleja.
Ivory Coast ruling party and the main opposition have both claimed victory in the legislative elections, with the complete results still to be announced. A senior member of the ruling party says that they have achieved their goal of securing around 60% of the seats. The top opposition party says that it has grabbed more than 50%. The opposition party also alleges that preliminary results were strewn with fraud, tampering, and manipulation. Observers estimate turnout to be only 20%, citing fear of violence in the former French colony. The parliamentary vote is a key test of stability 4 months after violence over the presidential vote. Clashes claimed some 90 lives in the West African nation. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com rib.org/en. From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. What a crowded bazaar! It's the month of Esfand, and this month in Iran is the month of hustle and bustle prior to Nowruz holiday. Nowruz includes special rituals in Iran. One of these rituals is growing sabze, that is growing seeds, for the Haftsin clad. I've come to this bazaar in order to buy a clay jar and a beautiful container for growing seeds. The month of Esfand is the last month of winter in Iranian calendar, and it's an ideal time for growing seeds. Growing sabze, or seeds, is a symbolic tradition in Iranian households since ancient times. Iranians, nearly 2 weeks or 10 days before Nowruz, grow seeds like wheat, lentil, mung bean, etc., in big or small containers, bowls, plates, or even clay pots. At the moment of the turn of the year, these containers of sabze are placed on haftsin cloth. Sabze is the symbol of refreshment, celebrating the season of growth, and is a blessing for life. Families keep the containers of sabze until 13th of the month of Farvardin. On Farvardin 13th, Iranians go out to the nature and celebrate this day. Then they throw their sabze into the flowing water. Growing seeds has special etiquettes, which I have learned them from my grandma. For this Nowruz, I'm going to grow wheat. Some people prefer lentil or mung bean. Well, first of all, we have to rinse the wheat. Then we pour some lukewarm water on the wheat. And keep it for a whole day. My wheat has been soaked in water for a whole day. Now I put them in a beautiful clay pot, which I've recently bought. I have also prepared a clean clod, and I dampen the clod. Then I put the clod over my dear wheat. This cloth is aimed at covering the wheat against the sunshine. The wheat needs a dark, wet place for growing. Okay, it's over now. Now I have to keep the wheat wet so that they will sprout. If you could remember, I had bought a clay jar from the bazaar. Honestly, growing sabze or seeds on a clay jar is much harder and different than the ordinary containers. The seeds which are suitable for growing on pots are the ones that produce mucilage and stick to the walls of the jar. I've bought some hedge mustard seeds, and I've left it in a bowl to be soaked for a whole night. Then I cover the jar by thin women's socks. Then I dampen it a little. Now I put the hedge mustard seeds on the jar, which have produced mucilage, on the sock. Don't worry. The mucilage makes the seeds stick to the sock very easily. Now you have to cover the whole of the jar with the seeds. Well, it's ready now. I hope it becomes a full and beautiful sabze so that I could surprise my grandma. My grandma thinks she's the only one who can grow full, beautiful sabze. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. The Saudi onslaught on the Yemeni people is fast approaching its sixth year in what Riyadh thought would be a month's blitz. And victory over the poor country of Yemen has turned into an embarrassment for the Saudis and their allies. The Saudi regime, which has been armed to the teeth by their Western allies in Washington, London and Paris, are now facing defeat on Sunday. A Saudi reconnaissance plane was shot down by a Yemeni missile. Abdul Latif al-Washali says the plane that was downed by the Yemeni military was very sophisticated. He says this shows that the army has boosted its air defense capabilities in the face of Saudi attacks. Let's listen.
The Yemeni army's air defenses had successfully shot down a combat turbulence belonging to the Saudi-led coalition, to the Saudi forces actually. It's Turkish-made. It was above the Al-Mazariq Directorate in Al-Jawf. governorate carrying out aggressive missions against the Yemeni people. It's not the first time that the Yemeni army targets this kind of drone successfully. It's been many times. This drone is very sophisticated, so this is an indicate of the Yemeni army's improved capabilities regarding air defense. The Saudi coalition had launched several airstrikes today in Sana'a, so this comes as a response to these hostile acts by the Saudi-led coalition.
I'd like to welcome my first guest to the program. Let's start it off in Sana'a. Welcome, Mr. Hossein Al-Bakhati, activist and political commentator. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, let's start off with what has happened currently. Let's talk about the progress that the Yemeni army has made and what you attribute it to. Okay. Unfortunately, we cannot hear Hossein Al-Bakhati. Let me see if we can cross over to Washington, D.C., and if we have our second guest, Michael Springman, author and former U.S. diplomat. Can you hear me, Michael Springman?
Yes, I can hear you through the phone here in the studio.
Okay, great. Yeah, unfortunately, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties tonight. We're working out of another studio. I appreciate everyone's patience. Well, Michael, let's look at what is happening. When we look at the situation that has taken place, I mean, about to enter the sixth year of something that was probably, with Riyadh's calculation, that was supposed to take a month or two. What do you attribute this to? Let's start from there.
Well, I attribute to the 6 years of war to the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, who began it, Mohammed bin Salman, not being able to see the handwriting on the wall, and along with the United Arab Emirates. They have been trying to destroy Yemen for the past 6 years, and the Ansar Allah people, the freedom fighters, have been resisting, have been increasing their territory, holding a good 60% of the population, and of course that population supports them. The Al-Qaeda, Daesh, ISIS, whatever you want to call it, the people sponsored by the United States and Saudi Arabia are holding, according to a Yemeni journalist I talked to this morning, Nasser Shakir, they're holding the Marib province, which is mostly mountainous and sparsely populated, and they're still fighting, and of course, what's sparking all this or continuing it is America, Britain, France, Germany selling the Saudis and Emiratis weapons. Now, Biden claims that he's going to stop selling offensive weapons to the Saudis, but I frankly don't see any difference between an offensive and defensive weapon. Whether it's a rifle with bullets, a tank, or a fighter aircraft, you can use it to defend your country, or you can use it to attack another country. The Americans have not renounced their war in Yemen. They've killed some 1,000 Yemenis with repeated American strikes inside the country. And for Biden to preach that he's dropping all sanctions and at the same time sanctioning high officials of the Ansar Allah movement because they attack ships, presumably belonging to the Saudis, is frankly hypocrisy. So it's basically... The Americans, as always, are talking out of both sides of their mouth and hoping to profit from the destruction caused.
Okay. Stay with me, Michael. Hopefully we can cross over to Sana'a and talk to Hossein Al-Bakhati now, activist and political commentator. Hossein, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I'm not sure I will be able to hear you. We're going to try this one time. Hossein, just give me your evaluation of what is taking place, especially events that we've seen today. What do you attribute this to? We have seen, especially today, and of course, shooting down a reconnaissance plane with a missile. How did we get here? It seems like things have definitely reversed from where it started almost 6 years ago.
Yes, this is exactly what's happening now. Yemeni armed forces have shot down today a Turkish made drone over Marib. This is the second Turkish-made drone to be shot down by Yemeni army. And today there was a statement from Yemeni Armed Forces spokesperson Amid Yahya Sari, which has announced a large scale military operation inside Saudi Arabia. This includes an attack using 14 drones and 8 ballistic missiles. There was the focus of this operation was Ras Tanur port in the Persian Gulf. This is one of the largest oil port in the world, and it exports 85% to 90% of Saudi oil production. Another drones and 7 ballistic missiles has targeted areas and military site inside Najran and Jizan and Asir. And to be honest with you, that now Saudi Arabia actually is becoming more and more under attack from Yemen. They have conducted today attack against sites inside Sana'a, including a fuel storage. They show you that Saudi actually deliberately blocking fuel ship from coming into Yemen, and as well deliberately targeting fuel storage in Sana'a today, because they want to bring the Yemeni people to their knees. But I think what's happening now is the opposite, especially after the latest announcement of this large-scale military operation. I believe if Yemeni army will extend its attack against all Saudi oil infrastructure, then we can actually end this war by breaking Saudi Arabia. But if we keep actually offering Saudi peace and offering Saudi truce, Saudi will continue in their blockade. And hundreds of hospitals are running low in fuel. Many businesses has closed. And yesterday, the Ministry of Health has announced that they are running low of fuel, and some hospitals might close. That's why I think Yemeni army should send a direct message to Saudi Arabia and to the United States that they will continue to target Saudi Arabia, target especially their oil infrastructure, if this war will not end and if this blockade will not be lifted from Yemen.
All right, stay with me, Hossein. Michael, your take on this, as I was saying earlier, definitely the tables have turned, and 6 years later, the Saudis and their allies are in a very, let's say, awkward position, to say the least. Why, prior to this time, and we're talking about 6 years, why has it taken so long, and why didn't the Saudis, prior to this point in time, basically just accept defeat and cut their losses?
Well, like all governments, when they're in an unpopular situation, they realize that if they quit and pull out and don't have a realistic cover story to explain this, they look bad. They seem to be aggressors. They appear to their own population as vacillating and dangerous to their neighbors. So I think that they prefer to keep digging at the hole they've dug themselves into. And it's getting to the point now where it's getting so deep they can't climb out of it. They realize what's happening. They can't be that stupid. But they figure as long as they keep fighting in Yemen, and Yemen, of course, is about the poorest Arab country, if not the poorest country in the entire world. 24 million of the 29 million people in the country are short of food. More than 200,000 people, and a good bit of them women and children, have been killed either directly as a result of the fighting or because of the lack of food, the lack of potable water, and lack of decent health care services.
So Michael,
so
let me just jump in.
As long as it's
Michael.
Yemen that they're attacking, and they're not attacking Iran, they're not attacking France or Germany or any other country that can fight back and has a strong economic base. The economy in Yemen is just shot to hell. It doesn't exist anymore from what I can see and have been told. So they figure we'll keep going after Yemen because Yemen can't fight back, and world public opinion doesn't care about Yemen.
Well, Hossein, let me get you back in this conversation. I mean, you talked about basically now that the Yemenis, the military, is not going to give in and will continue to put the pressure on Saudi Arabia now until the victory. Let's talk about the Yemeni people. Of course, the Yemeni people have suffered a lot and has been under a lot of pressure, as Michael has just talked about, from not only just bombardment, but also blockade. Now, with that being said, I want your overall opinion as far as the analysis on the ground, the Yemeni people, and wanting to go forward until the victory. How did they get here? How were they able to sustain themselves throughout this? And not only sustain themselves, but actually even make, we've seen a lot of technical advances.
To be honest with you, I think that this war actually has exposed who are willing to offer help to Saudi Arabia and who are loyal to United States, and those that people are actually fighting side by side with the Saudi backed forces. And if we can see, as an example, latest attack against Marib to liberate Marib, we've seen this huge outcry from the outside international community. And the reason for that Marib actually has become the last Al-Qaeda and ISIS safe haven in north of Yemen. Here, Sana'a forces have cleared all areas under Sana'a control, but this last area is Marib, north of Yemen. And we've seen that Marib actually produced 85 to 95% of oil and gas production. And this was actually 90% of Yemeni budget come from that oil and gas. And we've seen that no single Riyal actually is putting back into central bank in Sana'a, neither in Aden to pay the salaries and wages of Yemen. United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia and other countries involved in this war, they keep stealing the oil and gas and selling for their advantage. And Yemeni actually are suffering hugely, especially the blockade. Since Biden took place, Saudi did not allow a single ship to enter Hodeidah port. This means that even though Biden said he will stop supporting Saudi Arabia, but actually they are enforcing more blockade on Yemen. Neither Trump has not blocked this amount of oil tanker from reaching Hodeidah, but Biden, in just a matter of 3 weeks, they haven't let any ship, 3 months, they haven't let any ship to enter Yemen. That's why actually Yemeni now had come to a conclusion. They must unite themselves, they must liberate Marib, liberated from Al-Qaeda and ISIS and other Saudi-backed forces. They must gain back our oil field and gas production. They should come back to Sana'a, and they're going to pay the salaries, because Yemen actually cannot lift this blockade at this time by force, because maybe they have not the ability to attack in the sea, or to lift this blockade. That's why they have gone towards Marib, and that's why today they have actually directly hit the heart of the Saudi oil production.
Okay. Well, Michael, what is it about Yemen that these Western allies of Saudi Arabia won't give up? What are they after? Why will they not put pressure, and they have not put pressure, on Saudi Arabia to stop this war? Not only did they not put pressure, but they support what the Saudis have been doing. Why is that the case?
Well, it's the case because they see the oil that sits under the sands of Saudi Arabia is something like 17% of the world's reserves. They see the huge sales of weapons that these Western countries make to Saudi Arabia and to the United Arab Emirates, two of the most repressive and repulsive and medieval monarchies in the world. They don't want to go against the Western news media, which apparently is completely under control of the warmongering tribes, whether American, Israeli, or Saudi. I did some searches today on Google and could find nothing negative about the American support of the war or the European support of the war. And when you look more closely at it on DuckDuckGo, for example, you find that articles that don't talk about Iran using Yemen as a cat's paw to destabilize the Arabian Peninsula. You don't see articles about Yemen controlling being controlled by Iran. You don't see articles about Iran trying to destroy Saudi Arabia by use of Yemen, by supplying them with missiles, by supplying them with drones, by supplying them with this, that, and the other thing that enables them to resist the Saudi and Emirati attacks on their country. And the people, of course, in the West won't cry out about this. They will go on and on and on about Black Lives Matter here in the United States, but don't think brown lives matter in Yemen because they don't care. All they get is the one-sided whitewash view of the wonderful allies of Saudi Arabia and the Gulf Cooperation Council, particularly the Emirates. The Americans and the Europeans are so enamored of their own press and their own media that never ask questions, that never puts the Saudis and the Emiratis on the spot, that never puts restrictions on the travel of their officials or their citizens to other parts of the world. And this is exactly why the West supports them. They think it looks good in the eyes of the world news media that they're supporting this horrible country, Yemen, that is really a cat's paw and alter ego, if you will, of Iran. And of course, Iran is the source of all evil in the entire world, according to these people.
Well, Hossein, you had said that it's going to continue now. You believe the Yemeni army is going to continue until victory. What do you think that entails? I mean, do you feel that the Yemeni military is on the edge of victory, or your assessment of the current situation?
I think we are here in Yemeni army are on the verge of victory because we've seen now they are advancing on the ground. They have the upper hand on the ground, and as well, Saudi is not anymore safe. And if they continue those types of attack, I believe that Yemeni army will be that Yemeni army can actually defeat Saudi Arabia. And but if only those attack will keep hitting Saudi infrastructure and Saudi oil infrastructure, I believe that this war could come to an end soon. That's why Saudi Arabia, you have seen in this latest attack, they could not actually change anything. They have hit many areas in Sana'a. They have used all the power they have on their hand. They have got all the support from the United States and UK and other country. But at this time, Yemeni army still have a huge and large targets inside Saudi Arabia. Okay. That's why I believe attack like that, and attack against Saudi oil infrastructure, and as well attack against Saudi ports and airports. Even though some airports might be civilian airports, but we have came to as they say, an eye for an eye. And Saudi actually has forced Yemeni to do so. And we have seen latest announcement about a week ago in Saudi said they
I'm
have,
so sorry,
they
I'm going to have to interrupt you, Hossein.
By 600 drones, as they say, and 300 ballistic missiles.
Hossein, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt you. We are out of time. I think that he probably cannot hear me, but I want to thank him for being with us. Hossein al-Bahati, activist and political commentator out of Sana'a, Michael Springman, author and former U.S. diplomat out of Washington, D.C. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Signing out for myself and other crew right here in Tehran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you. please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering the doubts and questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
الله هو ذا الرحمن الله هو ذا المنان.
لا إله إلا الله.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear listeners, wherever you are, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to yet another edition from series of Q&A in Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. In this series of shows, we are trying to answer the questions with regard to theology or whatever goes towards religion and the beliefs of people, specifically the followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt, in order to discuss these issues with scholars from seminary schools. We have invited Sheikh Murtada Karimi to this session. I'd like to welcome Sheikh to the show and say salam to him.
Wa alaikum assalam and thank you for having me.
Thanks for accepting the invitation, Sheikh. Today's question or today's discussion would be around the topic that we posed and started talking about in our previous session, that is the concept of hijab and different issues around it, the value and importance of this discussion and how can we actually solve it once forever. We have been benefited from explanations of Sheikh Murtada Karimi in our previous session, and he is also again invited to give us some more information on the continuation of the same discussion and also the new questions that we have received from different questioners. Sheikh, we have been explaining, we have been learning from your explanations about the importance of hijab. And one single part of it that is where some say that you just follow your heart. If your heart doesn't have any problem or tendencies towards badness, just keep it on and go ahead and do not care for whatever is being said about hijab. So that's enough just to have a pure heart and it would be enough for your hijab and do not care and leave your hijab. Is it possible or accepted in Islamic worldview, and how can this sort of views be answered while there are not few in the society and it can be heard from here and there? And honestly, I think these sort of doubts have not entered the society from an Islamic environment. It is a bit close to what we have seen in Murja'a as an ideological sect that we have seen in the dawn of Islam, let's say, 1,000 years ago. How can we actually tackle with this issue that they say just follow your heart and leave whatever is being said about hijab, and if your heart is pure, and go ahead and do not care for anything else?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Thanks for raising the issue of the Murja. We know that in early Islam, after the time of the Prophet, there were some theological discussions among different Islamic denominations. One of them was about the definition of faith and iman and the role of amal salih, or one's actions, good actions, in forming the faith. Now, we have this deviant group called Murja'a. They believe that it is enough for you only to believe in your heart in the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the truthness of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his family. And then you are free to commit any kind of sin. And the Umayyad Caliph, in some eras, they also supported the Murji'ah because they also, based on this ideology, they were free to commit any kind of sin without being blamed for disbelief. Now, when we refer to the narrations, it is interesting that the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt, they tell the parents that take care of your youth and your adolescent and teach them before the Murji'ah go to them and teach them. Mm-hmm. This is very interesting. And what is the ideology of Murji'ah all about? This is what we see today, that it's only the matter of heart, that you believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and in the Prophet.
So it is started from theological issues and then led to these sort of, I don't know, social actions.
Yeah, that's the point. And also maybe political, it has also a political aspect as well to it. Mm-hmm. So the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt warned the parents that, be cautious about the Murji'ah and teach your children before they come to your children and teach them their ideas. What is this idea? It is referring to the fact that as long as you keep a pure heart, you do not need to do any obligatory act. You are free to commit any kind of sin. You have, the permission from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to commit any kind of sin. It's not violating, it's not against your faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So what is mentioned in today's question is a kind of, Murji'ah-like, question. So they say that you do not need to practice hijab. Rather, as long as you have, a pure heart, free from, bad tendencies, that's, But the point is that, again, I mention and repeat what I mentioned in the previous program. If you are a Muslim, then you cannot ignore the verses of the Quran. There are many verses in the Quran in which Iman and Amal Saleh, they have been mentioned next to each other. In most of the verses, when we have the phrase Amanu, right after that, we have Amal Salihat, which means those who believe and do righteous deeds. What is righteous deeds? The obligatory actions and the recommended actions.
So Iman, belief, and Amal Salih, that is good deed, are intermingled.
Exactly.
So they cannot be separated.
Exactly.
So I think it is, if we believe in Quran, this is a very explicit answer to this doubt.
That's true. And as I mentioned in the previous program, if we look at it from this perspective, that it's enough for you to have a pure heart, then we can leave aside all the obligations, because there is no difference between hijab and prayer, hijab and fasting, hijab and khums. I can claim that, okay, I will have a pure heart, but I'm not going to say the prayers, I'm not going to pay khums, I'm not going to go to Hajj because I have a pure heart. So those people, those especially women who are not practicing hijab, and they say that it's enough for us to have a pure heart, then with the same logic, they should be ready to leave all the other obligations. But they are not ready. Most of these ladies, they are practicing when it comes to other obligatory actions. They are not ready to leave prayer or leave fasting or going to Hajj. Mm-hmm. Many of them are very sensitive about these obligatory actions. When it comes to the concept of hijab, some of them, they say that we have a pure heart and we do not need that. But the point is that with the same logic, you must be able to abandon all the other obligatory actions as well, because there is no difference between hijab and the other obligatory actions.
So it is an obligatory action.
Exactly. It's been mentioned in the Quran in various verses. And interestingly, when we refer to the Noble Book of Quran, we see that, as I mentioned, there are some verses in the Noble Book of Quran about the importance of hijab. In one verse, it is addressing the believers, the mu'mineen. Mm-hmm. which means that practicing hijab is a part of iman.
True.
Let me recite the verse in chapter Al-Ahzab, verse 59. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.